Welcome, everyone, to Lighting the Void. I'm your host, Joe Roop. This is Lighting the Void, a truth-seeking radio show. I used to say it was the one and only truth-seeking radio show, but that's not necessarily true. Tonight is a special night, a night that we do once a month, and we're bringing back Daniel Joseph to come on the show, who is the author of Swimming with a Whale. And if you don't know anything about Daniel Joseph, let me tell you. He's the author of Swimming with a Whale, as I stated before. And in my opinion, the definition of a true seeker, he is a student of Dascalos and a true brother of the light. These teachings are truly a diamond in the rough. Daniel Joseph is not only an author, but a direct student of the famous mystic and healer Dr. Stylianos Ateschlis, better known as Dascalos, who taught circles of students techniques and hidden methods that can be traced back at least 2,000 years. Tonight, Daniel will be taking your calls about the teachings and the books by Dascalos. You will also learn practices and meditations that can get you started and on the way to becoming aware of the truth of who you are and what you are capable of. These questions and teachings are based on these books by Dascalos. If you're looking for a wonderful book and a method on Christian mysticism or just mysticism as a whole, the esoteric practice and the esoteric teachings are the basis of these lessons. And I also recommend Get Swimming with a Whale by Daniel Joseph at thewhale.us, who covers extensively these teachings in his book as well and speaks about them. Now, though many have claimed miracles, but few have actually witnessed them firsthand, Daniel tells us a bit about Dascalos and the teachings, as well as how we can apply this to our daily lives. For those who turn away at first the sign of Christianity, and I tell you this, there's a deeper meaning to it. So I just challenge you to listen to what he calls the true teachings, that maybe these teachings that we've been taught on the surface are not really what they are at all. And you will see similar teachings, I'm sure, in your current system or mystery school that you study or go to. We're truly honored to have him back, and I'm glad you are here with us tonight, Daniel. Thank you for spending your time with us. We really appreciate it. How are you doing this evening?
Good. Thanks for having me again. Hello, everybody.
So, I know you're busy, and I know you're doing a lot of stuff, and you're doing something with the Researchers of Truth in Indiana. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been working on a physical center for a long, long time, and we've really kind of turned a corner lately, and we're got a little more construction to do, not much, but then basically just furnishing the place, and we're going to open it up for students to come and really spend some, you know, deep time studying these materials. And of course, we'll have workshops and classes too, but we're trying to do as a retreat center so people can come that are really seriously interested in these teachings. So right now we're just doing a little fundraising, trying to get some money for the final expenses so we can open it.
Right on. That's pretty cool. So now you can actually have a physical place for people to go to. That's really nice.
We got an indoor meditation hall and an outdoor amphitheater where we can host all these things.
Oh, that's awesome. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but I want to bring it up. If you go on Gum Road, Daniel has some teachings there, and I believe that's when you went to Canada. Is that right?
Yeah, it was last year's Canadian seminar. And they were basically totally addressed those questions you were asking, you know, you were mentioning before. Who am I? What am I? Where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? And how do I get there? So all those real, real important questions of a seeker of truth, we spent days on. And so we've now put them on videos, and they're on Gumroad that you can watch live.
Yeah, I've gotten the first few of them, and they're pretty amazing. And if you guys want to call in and ask Daniel a question, the number is 831-777-8643. That's 831-777-VOID. If you have any questions for Daniel, he will be happy to take them. And usually when we do this, Daniel likes to open up with the teachings. So I'll go ahead and give you the floor, Daniel.
All Okay, I just want to say a little bit, give a little bit of a lesson here before we start with the questions. And as researchers of truth, we have seven promises we make to ourselves to help us, focus and stay on top of actually the work in front of us to free our personality enough that it can become merged with the inner self, call it the soul self. But that's really the aim of the researchers of truth. There's so many different branches, but the main aim is self-realization. And so the third promise of a researcher of truth is to themselves to make good use of the divine gifts of thought and word at all times, in all places, and under all circumstances. Thought and speech really are truly divine gifts. Now just think how much time we all waste every day on meaningless things. If we were to write down every thought we think during any day, we would be stunned on how much we abuse the divine gifts of thought. And if you were to show this record of endless thoughts to a psychiatrist, he most likely would conclude it was written by a crazy person. But why? Because our thoughts mostly hop in a seemingly random way from one petty subject to another without much logic connecting them. Now, these thoughts are elementals, and that they rise from our subconsciousness to the surface of our conscious mind and constantly seek to engage us. You can try this for yourself. Just try to meditate immediately after a busy work day, and you will definitely see how these kinds of elementals distract, dissuade, and make it really hard to concentrate enough to have a decent meditation. To have a good meditation, prayer, or visualization, we must shut that door to our subconsciousness and put a guard at the door, too. So it's easy to see how much the divine gift of thought and speech are misused by individuals as well as society. And this creates more disorder in us and in our culture. Since our childhood, we've been learning how to misuse thought, desire, words, and behaviors, creating these mute and meaningless spirits, which are our elementals. Christ called them mute and meaningless. They are mute because they have no logic in them. And they are meaningless because they have no real purpose. Not that all our mundane thoughts have no logic or purpose, but just most of them. Mundane thinking is something like that of a behavior of a fly at a picnic. 1 minute's on rotten garbage, the next minute's on a tasty piece of food, and maybe at another minute it's back on the garbage again. But as we train in the system for research of truth, we will not let the mind hop uncontrolled like that. From now on, we will be sending thought-type elementals as protectors, guardian angels, and blessings. Knowing how to create these human in nature angel elementals and having real faith, you will witness what people call miracles. These kinds are most powerful and capable of almost anything. We learn to create good elementals of good purpose and give birth to them from our own etheric double. Until now, we've misused the power of our etheric double, sending off thousands of mute and meaningless elementals, mostly subconsciously. But when we stop giving birth to these kind, we regain the energy that was empowering them. Now, this is important because this makes the good ones we create much stronger and much more effective. So to do this, the first step is to learn the basic functions of the etheric energy and, comprising our etheric double. And this has been the subject of our Facebook group, How to Use the Kinetic, Aesthetic, and Imprinted Ether. And how to form and send good elementals from our etheric double consciously for the benefit of our health and others. Later, after we develop these skills of the etheric double with our material body, we'll learn how to use the etheric double of the psychic analytical body, which is a much more difficult task. And because elementals always, always, always return to their creator, they can and sometimes do overload the etheric double, which turns our subconsciousness into a messy jungle. Now, what this means is that we're each in a condition of our own creation for which we're responsible. It doesn't do any good to blame others. We are creating the conditions we find ourselves in. even if people are reacting, you know, acting bad to us, it's how we react that really makes the difference. Thus, cleaning and clearing our subconsciousness is one of the basic works of a researcher of truth. And if our aim is to sincerely help others, then we're allowed to help clear their subconsciousness too. And one of the very most important things to clear in a subconsciousness is guilt, because guilt blocks healing, which is to say, guilt blocks the flow of this etheric vitality. Take note of that point. It's very important. It's very obvious we live on Earth for only a certain period of time. That time goes pretty quickly. Since the death of our material body is a certainty, we should not waste the time we are given. Our hairs on our head are numbered, just like all our heartbeats, and we as a personality never know the number of heartbeats that remain. So it's to our great benefit to find out who and what we are now. This is a treasure you can take with you during the change we call death. This is really the most important piece of knowledge a seeker of truth can seek. Simultaneously, this knowledge will allow us to know who and what the other human beings are too. And this knowledge motivates us to serve our fellow human beings. Why? Because if you look around and just think about it, everything in the universe serves, all the way from the absolute infinite selfhood we call God, down to a single atom, which is serving us by forming part of our material body we live in. It forms the food and the water, which serves to keep our body alive. And just think, the food we eat now did not exist maybe 6 months ago, and what we will eat in 6 months does not exist now. The plants, the animals, the food will be created through what's called divine dispensation. The sunlight, water, air, and earth will provide the foods we need. All we do is take and take from nature what we ourselves do not create. And what do we give nature? What do we give the people around us? Most people are so caught up in consumerism these days that that consumerism makes us want to take and own as much as we can, maybe even sometimes depriving others so that we can have more and more. These kinds of things that we take are simply matter in one form or the other. But we also take and use the super substance we call mind every day. We take it through the etheric counterpart of our brain and from the vibrations of our psychonoetical body, and we form this mind super substance into thoughts. Our brain isn't just automatically generating thoughts. We are formulating it. Formulating it from what? From this mind super substance, from this formless substance we take and create our thoughts and emotions. But again, we are taking what we did not create. The super substance of mind is not ours. We have the right and ability to use the divine gift of thought and reason, yet it does not belong to us. It's something given to us by God. And it's so ironic to me that people use this divine gift of thought to deny the existence of the Creator who gave it to them. It's amazing, really.
Yeah. It's...
So I just want to touch on the divine gift of thought here before we start.
Well, could you do me a real quick favor before we start? Because we got a few new listeners here that are listening in. And, you know, as I explained that they were, you know, you were a student of Daskalos. I know you could talk about Daskalos for hours and hours and hours. But could you just kind of give us just a real rundown of who Daskalos was to you?
He was everything. He was like the, you know, you go there and you're hoping to meet somebody that really knows. Because when you're looking for a teacher or a master or a teaching, you know, you go around and you try different things. And do you know? And you test them. But when I got to, and I've been doing that for 20 years, gone to India and all around. But when I got to him, this guy knew everything. I mean, it was just unbelievable. He seemed to me to be like the master mechanic of the universe. You know, he was like Google back in the day. He knew the answer to everything, mundane things as well as the most lofty spiritual concepts you can imagine. So, but when you were with him, he played a lot of different roles for me. He was like this, you know, wise father guiding me. He was like a great grandfather, telling me funny stories and getting me to laugh.
Right.
And at times, when he did healing on me, you felt like the care of a loving mother. So he just was all, you know, he just seemed to embody all these different roles for me. And, you know, I was around a lot, and I saw just an amazing lot. I saw people who were crippled stand and walk. I saw people with short legs. One day he lengthened five different legs. And what he would do is he came up, he would take a ruler and measure the person's legs and show everybody that their leg, one leg was shorter. And then he would work on them, you know, 10 minutes or so, and pull the leg and work and pull and put energy into it. And he was visualizing the whole time of the leg increasing in length. And then he would measure it, and there it was. They were the same. And the people were so, most of the time, they were just surprised. You know, you might think they would expect it, but when a person got a healing, almost everybody was just dumbfounded because their mind just couldn't quite catch up to the reality that just happened. So, you know,
right.
It was almost like he was just working outside of time, you know, like if you had a material wound, if you had a cut on your leg, he could put his hand, he didn't value this very much, but he could put his hand on your leg, and within a very couple minutes, the wound would be closed. But, you know, he said, that doesn't mean much to me, because if you just kept it clean, within a week, it would be closed anyway, you know. So, but these are the kind of things we saw. So he certainly became, you know, I don't know what word to put with this. You know, he just became the embodiment of everything I was looking for in a spiritual master.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I've still got more reading to do. Okay, we got a call here. All right, 770 area code.
Well,
sorry.
Let me jump in. I want to do one question. I you know, last time we were on the air,
sure.
Jonas asked a question, and I didn't really fully answer it. I just want to kind of finish the answer.
Okay.
He had asked me about some of my personal experiences, to which I replied with the Researchers of Truth motto that we don't reveal much about our own experiences, and we don't disclose much, promise much. So I would like to add that to something to that, that the experience you've heard about and read about Daskaloses are true. And those kind of experiences are the experiences of other researchers too. And these kinds of experiences are my experience. And they will be your experience, too, as you advance in this system. Because it's the same reality we're talking about. Now, maybe the way you have the experiences, but definitely you will prove to yourself that you have this etheric double. Because you can use it with the training exercises. You can use it. You can start sending off, as I said, you know, real constructive healing elementals instead of just meaningless thoughts. So I just wanted to say that to him, that, it, you know, these experiences lie ahead of him if he continues. And then I got this other question that came in, and that's the last one, from Edo in Canada. And he's asking about, before you do exercises involving inner body work, he has some Sufi training, and they used to advise three things. One of them is, don't do these kind of exercises, and this includes meditation, until 2 hours after you've eaten. And he says this, he was told, because the concentration of the mind on the body will disturb the digestive process and related blood flow. And, you know, I would say, yeah, that's true. That's true. But even more importantly is, it's hard to meditate after you've been, I mean, it's hard to do any kind of work after you've eaten. When you got a full stomach, all the blood rushes away from you to you know, process the food. So for sure, it's probably good to wait so that you can concentrate better. Also, he said, don't have tight clothing around the waist. This is also very true, to wear looser clothing and definitely maybe loosen your belt a little bit. And then another, as Islamic tradition, they have is splashing cool or cold water on your face, neck, arms, chest, hands and feet, and the lower legs. If you go to a mosque, I went to this mosque in Egypt, the Ali Muhammad Ali Mosque. It's a huge ancient mosque made out of alabaster. As you go in, there's, washing things to, everybody washes their feet and hands before they go in. But it's not just for cleanliness. It's for these other reasons, to refresh yourself and, you know, increase the blood flow and all that. So these are good things to do. And I want to add one other thing about meditation. You know, when you do a meditation, you know, you usually pick a time to do a meditation. But, you know, if you try this, you'll find out that you can really get much, much deeper. And that is like a half an hour, maybe even an hour before. You start preparing for the meditation, and you start doing it by calming yourself down, slowing your thoughts down, to start to create this psychological prep before you ever go into your meditation room and sit down. And you'll find that you can go deeper quicker, and you'll have better meditations too.
Things to do it.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So are you ready to take the a call, Daniel?
I am.
Okay. I believe this is George with 770 area code.
Yes, it is.
Hey, George.
Yes, from Atlanta. Hey, Daniel, how are you?
Nice. Good, George. Hi.
It's off track from what you've been saying. I've been listening, and it's very interesting. But my question has to do with Vasculosis explanation, let's say, of the significance of original sin and Jesus's crucifixion, and if they're interlinked as far as like paying back karma for the original sin, or how would he explain the significance of Jesus's, you know, brutal, brutal death and crucifixion?
Mm-hmm.
Completely off track.
Well,
a Christian question that's been, that I've been thinking about.
Well, certainly he had the question about original sin often. And his reply was, there's no such thing. He says that was a Jewish invention to just explain how man came to the earth. He said it was always part of the divine plan for man to come to earth and to experience, you know, the experiences we have on earth, the worlds of duality, the good, the bad, the hot, the cold, the up, the down. All these things we have to have to enrich the soul. The soul knows everything, but it hasn't done everything. So it's in need of actually living through those experiences, and that's what coming to earth does. There is no original sin. And if you really want to think about it, if you look at the Old Testament stories, the main ones, we're told 1,000 years before by the Sumerians. Except in this case, for example, the Garden of Eden story, you know, you've got in the Jewish tradition, you've got Adam, Eve, the tree, apple and a tree, and a snake, right? Well, if you look 1,000 years before, you can see Sumerian art that shows the very same scene. But the tree is turned upside down with its roots up in the air, and the female reaches up, grabs the apple, and hands it to the man. Now, I think he was called Adama, even, in the Sumerian language, and Eva. I think they're very close to the same names the Jewish people gave them. But the whole difference is, you know, the story in the Old Testament, it's like, a passing the buck, you know. It's like God tells Adam and Eve not to eat the apple. He comes to the garden. He goes, all right, what have you done, man? He says, it wasn't my fault. Eve gave me the apple. And he goes, Eve, what did you do? And she said, it's not my fault. It's the snake's fault. Snake tempted me. But in the Sumerian story, this is really the beautiful thing. And that woman's the bad guy in this story, right? But in the Sumerian story, the woman is the good guy because she's reaching into this tree, which has its roots in the air. Why does it have its roots in the air? Because it represents a tree of cosmic nourishment. So she takes nourishment and gives it to man. And that's what women really do. So it's just a twisting of the story. So there really was no original sin. Daskalos says it's so clear that Michael didn't chase the people out of the garden. He blessed them with the sword to descend into the worlds of matter. And then, of course, in the Bible, it says God dressed them in tunics of skin. That's just a symbol to describe coming into a fleshy body for an incarnation. That's all it is. Now, as far as Christ on his suffering and dying on the cross for our sins and all that, Christ carries the sins of humanity on his shoulder. He still does. He still, Daskalos uses the percentage 90%. He's carrying 90% of everybody's stuff. He said, otherwise we would collapse. We couldn't make it. It's so heavy. But this was all a plan. And if you listen, you know, if you read the Gospels, he talks. No, this is what I've come for. This very hour I've come for. And so why? Now, he's sitting here, you know, always before, the enlightened people, they said, oh, we're not our material body. We're a deathless spirit. They all said that. But how could any of them prove it? The only way it could be proved for him to undergo that process of being killed and then resurrect his body. So he was actually proving the truth of his teachings and what these other masters had claimed through previous centuries. So it's no accident. It's not like, you know, the fall created such bad karma for everybody that Christ had to come and take it. That's not it. It's we got off track. You know, we got off, and he came to show us the way back and also to prove we are not just a material body. And when you come out of your body during an out-of-body experiences, you'll realize, when you turn around and look at your body, that's one of the greatest benefits of an out-of-body experience. The fear of death is gone because here I'm out. There's my body. I'm obviously not my body. So,
amazing. Excellent. Thank you, Daniel.
Sure.
That was a good question.
Yeah, it was.
All right. Well, if anybody's got any more questions, it's like I said, it's 831-777-8643. I've got a question from the chat room on Spreaker from Craig. And he says, without having the freedom to live exactly how we would like, what are some ways to reset our mind and our chakras while performing out societal duties?
With love. Try to do everything you do with as much, first of all, love, much caring, as much as you can bring to the table. But also, just try to do everything you do. It doesn't matter what it is. Making coffee at Starbucks, it doesn't matter. But make it as conscious as you possibly can. If you breathe more consciously, you're benefited. If you eat more consciously, you're benefited. Everything you do, the more consciousness you can bring to it, the greater the benefit. So my advice is to, you know, have a love in your heart, good cheer in your heart, and try to do everything very, very consciously.
All right. And Paul, I'm not sure what he's saying here. I don't know if it's a question, but he's saying if God wanted us as men to have free will, he was the serpent in the garden. As if he had told us not to eat and we didn't, then where's the godlike ability of man? Then he puts a question mark, right? So he's saying he has none, as he's not that smart, who has no free will to think for himself. So God maybe was the serpent and we needed to eat of the tree to become like, to become godlike or like Elohim instead of just an animal. I don't know if he's asking that as a question or if he's making that as a statement. Do you agree with that at all?
No, the snake is a classic symbol in Sumerians and all the old culture. The symbol of the snake is eternity, because the snake sheds its skin and doesn't die. And same thing with the moon. The moon seems to die, but it comes back. So they're a symbol of this eternal recreation of itself. But the snake, it's just, that's it. It just represents eternity.
All right.
So I'm not sure I understand the rest of his question, but free will for sure. Man was given for this. The garden story, you know, is the garden story, but clearly man has been given free will. But so how does that really work? Because some people say, no, there is no free will. So is there free will or not? Well, there is, but it's within the circle of possibilities. Like, we have free will. We can get up in the morning, maybe we can go to work, or maybe we skip work. But we definitely are in the material body. You know, that's not our free will. None of us remember saying, oh, I want to come to Earth and be in a material body and, you know, go through Earth life. None of us remember that. So it's almost like Daskalos used to give this analogy. He said, if you buy a ticket on a steamer going from New York to London, he said, that's destiny. Once you buy that ticket, you get on that boat, your destiny is to go to London. However, how you behave on the boat is your free will. So you can go to church, you can gamble, you can do whatever you want. That's our free will. So within the circle of possibilities, in the circle of possibilities I'm referring to is being born as a human, growing as a child, becoming an adult, becoming an old person, and passing over. That's the circle of possibilities for a human being on the earth plane. Within that circle, we have the choice to misbehave or behave in a really beautiful way or whatever we want to do. So the choice is ours to make, and the consequences are ours to reap.
Right. Okay. Yeah, he said that was a question. He was asking, you know, it as a question. Sorry about that, Paul. Okay. And speaking of Jonas, Jonas sent me another question. I'm not sure. I guess I don't have a way for the international people to call in. I need to work on that. He wanted me to ask you, why are there practices to burn karma if you cannot escape your karma? And why do they work and how? So why are there practices to burn your karma off if you can't escape it anyways? And why do they work and how? I think you have answered that before, but he did send that to me.
Well, I mean, who said you can't escape your karma?
Yeah.
That's not possible. I mean, no one said that. Clearly you can. And, you know, a lot of times I like to give the example that I saw in Cyprus, which there was a doctor there. And he had killed somebody with a sword or a knife in a previous lifetime. But even without knowing this, he intuitively just was attracted to the medical profession and became a surgeon. So here this fellow who, you know, lived by the sword, had, you know, he should die by the sword, karmically speaking, has paid that karma off proactively by using the same thing that he killed with to heal with. So, of course, we can transmute karma. There's always a way to do that. I mean, there's some karmas, you know, you'll take for sure because you don't know how. But it is possible to transmute them, especially if you act proactively like that. You know, pay it forward, you know. Do good. Even if you don't know what your karma is, you know, you for sure you've got karma, you wouldn't be on earth.
Right.
So we should always try to play it forward by being as best people we can to the people around us. Because it's an absolute fact. He who loves much is forgiven much.
Right. Well, I have a question for you, Daniel, and I struggle with this a lot because I study with mystical teachings, magical teachings. I'm always back and forth, and I'm studying. And you get one or two teachings. You get one from a magical side that says, We have been lied to. We don't know our own personal power. We need to understand our own personal power. And then you get another side that says, you know, and I'm not saying you say this, but other people say this, that we're just like animals and we can't do anything without God and we need to let God in. So, and then we can do things. And I'm seeing something in between. It's kind of like, yes, I think we've been lied to, and yes, I don't think we know our own personal power, but we really can do this by ourselves at all, or can we?
Well, it depends who you mean by we. Now, if you're talking about the present-day personality,
yeah,
you know, no, it needs help. But if you're talking about your spirit soul, that is God. I mean, it's a particle of God, so that is the thing that's doing the power. So when you speak of God or your, you know, self-realization or God-realization, these are very close to the same thing because as a spirit soul, we are like a cell in the body of God.
Right.
So it depends what the person's, you know, what you're saying by we.
Well,
if you don't have the present-day personality, yes, definitely you need help.
Right.
And, you know, God really does do everything. We have our free will and we do some things, but again, it's within this parameters of the circles of possibilities for a human being.
Now, you teach about the getting in contact with your guardian angel, And they're also what I call, this is what I call them, white magicians who teach the same thing, except they go about it in a systematic way. And I've heard you bring this up before. Is all that necessary, or can we just listen and really listen to our guardian angel, which are what they call the holy guardian angel? Do we have to go through a process before we can speak to this angel, or has it been there all along?
It's always been there, the same angel through all the lifetimes. It's been speaking with you. You're speaking with it now. Most people think they're talking to themselves, especially when you notice it reminds you of things maybe you didn't quite, you know, this is one example. Sometimes it reminds you or points out things you didn't do that weren't, you did do that weren't quite right. It never rebukes you. It never criticizes you or anybody else, but it will draw your attention to something. And so, you know, a lot of times it happens while I'm driving in a car or in a shower or something where you're sort of distracted, your lower mind's distracted by something else. But absolutely, it happens. But you're constantly in a dialogue with it. You just haven't made it conscious yet. It's a subconscious dialogue that's going on. And believe me, they are so happy when you start to listen. It's almost like a parent with a small child, and the child goes around and he never listens. And so, you know, the parent would be so happy the child turned and started listening and seeking their advice. So, you know, we always are suggesting to seek the advice of your own guardian angel. Now, I have to put a warning in there, because the moment you start doing that, your egotism, which does not want you to see the truth, it wants you to believe you're this personality, either a really great one or a really bad personality or something. It tries to keep you caught in the illusion that you're only this present-day personality. It doesn't want you to reach self-realization, because you will annihilate it by that very act. So it's not a being, but it's a created living existence, and it's like all living existence, it tries to preserve its own life. So you have to watch out for the egotism to, and it's kind of a mimic, because it likes to mimic the sound and the way it talks, but it can't really fake it. If you're paying really close attention, you'll know. It's almost like if you were in a room and you had your eyes closed and your mother came in from behind you and spoke, you would know your mother's voice. You would not be confused. Mm-hmm. And as you start to learn how this guardian talks to you, you recognize its voice, and it's just clear, simple. It doesn't say a lot of words, and of course the words are thought transfers, they're not audible words, but you hear them as words in your own language. And but it's just has the voice of authenticity, and it's been with us from the very beginning. It's seen every crime we've ever committed. It's heard every complaint we've ever made. It's known, because it's egofied with us, it's aware of everything we've ever done, not only just in each incarnation, but in between incarnations. And it stays with us till the very last moment when we reunite with God at the end of the journey.
Okay, that's good.
It's very beautiful.
Debbie in the chat room, we call her the boss, right? She's cool. She wanted to know, she's asking, how do we train ourselves to listen to that? And what you're saying is that voice has been there the whole time, right?
So it's always going on. We just have to start to pay attention to that inner dialogue we think we're having with ourselves. Sometimes it's with ourselves, but there is this dialogue. If you pay attention, you'll notice it. Another way to just, you know, just like, how do you get to know a new person you meet? Well, you slowly start asking questions, you start listening, and pretty soon a friendship develops. And it's exactly the same way with the guardian angel, or any angel, really. It's like a friendship develops. So basically what I would say is sit down, empty your mind, be very quiet, and ask a very, very sincere question. And expect you're going to get an answer. But don't expect it right in that moment. Because what they do is they wait until you're really ready, and then it presents the answer to you. And it's so profound when they do it that way. So I would just suggest her to just sincerely go inside and start asking her questions. But make sure they're serious questions, because the guardian angel won't reply to petty things like, you know, should I get a latte or a cappuccino today? It's not going to answer you that correct thing.
Or what horse should I bet on or something, right?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to work. All right. Okay. I hope this is who I think it is. This is a 970 area code. You're on the air with Daniel Joseph.
Hey, Joseph. Hi, Daniel. It's Liz in Arizona. How are you both tonight?
Good. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm good. I love this show, and thanks so much for doing it, both of you.
No problem.
I have so many questions, but I've got a simple one I was thinking about, which is not really simple, but it's about guilt and how we overcome our personal guilt. I know it's an obstacle for so many things, and I don't know that I've ever asked you that question before, Daniel, about guilt. And
I don't think you have, yeah.
I know. So I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Okay. Well, as I said before, I mean, guilt is an absolute spiritual killer. It blocks the flow of etheric vitality. It's so detrimental. And yet, some of the main strongest religions in the country, in the world, teach guilt. They give guilt. And it's such a bad, bad teaching. Never accept it. I mean, if you did something wrong, repent. But repent doesn't mean what the churchy word repent. Repent means it's from the Greek, and in the Bible it was called metanoia, which means repentance, but it doesn't mean it like we think of it. It means repentance means to change your thought, your feeling, and your behavior. It's not just saying the words, oh, I'm sorry for it. But, you know, a lot of times, I think it was around the 1300s in the church, they started developing this concept of atonement for your sins. You were supposed to feel really guilty about your sins, and then you had to atone for it. And they would do this self-flagellation thing, beating themselves up, which is just the opposite of what you really want to be doing. You want to remove the guilt. And you'll notice in Christ, when Christ healed, he would say to the person, your sins have been forgiven. That line was to relieve the guilt of the person. Relieve the guilt of the personality, because when there are illnesses and accidents and things, there's an element of guilt, even if it's subconscious, most people don't notice it. There is something in there. And so he would always, try to relieve the person's thing before he even attempted the healing. Now, this is what a good counselor should do, a good psychotherapist should do. He should study the person, talk to them, and try to see where they're caught, what's catching them, where they feel guilty about something, and try to relieve the guilt. This is the same thing what a church confessor is really supposed to be doing. They're supposed to absolve the guilt feeling from the person so that the healing can take place. Because as long as you're feeling guilty, the healing can't take place because that blocks it.
Mm-hmm. Great. So when we apply that right now, Daniel, so for example, some religions believe baptism is relieving sin, or I think of the LDS faith or the Mormon faith. But when you have those things in your life that, you can't change and you feel guilty about, so you repent, but when they still bother you in your mind, you just have to turn away from that like an elemental and not give it any energy.
Absolutely. It is an elemental, and it's really blocking our way. So, if you've done something, okay, yeah. I mean, be the first to admit it. If somebody accuses you of something, look, see if you really made the mistake, so... check yourself for sure. And if you've made a mistake, correct it. Don't beat yourself up about it. Just fix it. You think about how many times people beat themselves up about making a mistake, and that half of that energy would have corrected the mistake.
Right. Very good. That's really helpful. Thank you so much. I have a different question, too, if you have time for one
sure,
more.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's often befuddling to me how Daskalos was here in a physical form on the earth with these amazing abilities and insights, and was such a wonderful teacher. And I know he didn't want to be a guru or anything like that, and lived a very humble life. I often wonder, are there others like Daskalos?
Well, that's a good question. I wonder the same thing.
Around, and they're just quietly doing, and perhaps as they leave the earth, someone will publish their writings, and I don't know. I think before I found Researches of Truth, I was looking and looking and looking, and so grateful to find these teachings and recognize them right away as truth in my heart. But I think that's a lot of people's experience, like, wow, here right. It is. And I just don't know why there wouldn't be more.
So. Well, there are. There are. That's a very good question. And there are a number of very advanced ones. And they're scattered around the world, But as far as Daskalos, he was one of these seven. Now, there's always seven of these super high masters on the planet at once. Three of them never reveal themselves to anybody. They work behind the scenes. You hear about these sometimes yogis up in the cave, and all they do is in the cave. You think, what are they doing? Well, they're working for the whole planet and humanity at a higher level. So, but these masters in our system, there's seven of them always on the planet at one time. Daskalos was one. His area was the Mideast over there, pretty much, northern Africa, Cyprus, and that Mediterranean area. And there was another one. Master Hilarion was living at the same time of Daskalos. Now, Master Hilarion is the reincarnation of St. Paul. But there's always these guys on the planet. But they don't care, really. They don't really want to be out and have they don't want to be on stage and have a big following. They just want to do their work, and they each have a certain assignment for a certain group of people. And so his was exactly this. He came in to systematize and organize this stuff and present this material that's been handed down for 2,000 years orally, primarily orally. You see little fragments of it show up in other teachings, but it was primarily an oral tradition. Now, for the first time, it was permitted to reveal more and to release it to the public. And so what we have in the teachings of the Researchers of Truth is, it's just an unbelievable thing, because we're right on the edge of this stuff hitting the planet, and it's going to spread through the planet like a wave over time. Daskalos said one in the future it would be taught in regular schools, because what's being taught in regular schools, a lot of it's kind of useless. The history is kind of a propaganda by the people who wrote the history books from your country. And that's so useful. And we learn stuff, and we just learn and regurgitate it back for the test, and never do we think of it again. He said it's far more important to learn to teach your children who they are, what they are, what's life, how to have a life that you have real satisfaction. So he said these things would be brought out in the schools in the future. But there are these masters. Now, when I was there in 1991, one day he said, there's another one. He's in America. He's a young Native American, but he's being protected by the elders. It's not his time to come out yet. So a couple of us have been looking for this fellow, but we haven't found him yet. I just heard the other day from someone that I trust felt that he was in Arizona, but he's still being protected. He was a very young boy when I in 91, so he's probably coming close to the age to come out soon. So
do you know who
we'd
he
like
is?
To find him That's if we cool. can. You no, know. I don't know who he is. I just know he's a Native American. And he's someplace in Arizona, was the last information that I heard that I trust. So, but, there's another one coming. Like I said, they're always there. They're always on the planet.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful information. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, boy, this show is just great, and I'll let someone else have a turn. And we'll look forward to talking more soon. Thanks, both of you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks, Liz. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Liz, she's cool. She's helped out a lot. Thanks for calling, Liz. All right, Daniel, I have another question from the chat room if you're ready for it. It's from Caroline. And Caroline wants to know, is it true that when we arrive here to meet and interact with, and she has in quotations, soul families or groups or certain people, for instance, does a child choose its parents, as the Buddhists claim? There is a lot of confusion about this, she says.
Could you repeat that last part again?
Sure.
I missed it.
She says, for instance, does a child choose its parents like the Buddhists claim?
That's been said a lot. You know, a lot of people say that. New Age people say that. I guess the Buddhist people say that. So somebody asked Daskalos. He said, nobody ever asked me who I went to incarnate with. So he sort of shut the idea down. You know, it's just kind of a New Age notion that it didn't work that way. And the way he says it works is that when a soul is ready for incarnation, it's time for them to reincarnate. The ray of their spirit soul projects down, stressed in a noetical body, descends to the psychical plane, stressed in the psychical body, but there it pauses. And it waits for an opportunity to incarnate. And what it's waiting for is the right circumstances with parents in the situation to evolve to where it's right for them based on their, you could say, karmic patterns, their life lessons, based on their vibration to find the right spot. And he says it's like a little bit like if you had a colander with a bunch of different size holes in it, and then you poured a bunch of different size balls in it and shook it. It would take a little while, but sooner or later, each ball would find the hole that it fit and find its way through. And he says that's what happens when the soul's pausing and waiting to find that opportunity to incarnate. And so the soul, even while that's going on, the soul hovers around the parents. And it actually encourages them to make love. Once you find a thing, that very soul that's about to be born is encouraging their parents to make love so it can have a vehicle for entry.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard that a lot too, and I thought that was really cool, but I wasn't never sure about it. And she said that she thought it was a little bit of, a little bit of bull, but she wanted to clear it up like that, you know, that we incarnate with certain people and groups and that we choose our parents and stuff like that, you know.
That's true. We do incarnate with groups.
Okay.
That part is absolutely true,
cool.
But it's not done by the will of the personality. It's done by the law of attraction, by the vibrations we have.
Okay.
You know, everything we've done and said and done and thought, and we create a vibration, a tone, and that tone attracts us to other people. And when we're in harmony, we think it's good. But sometimes our lessons attract the very opposite, so we can get a different kind of lesson, too, so...
All right.
It's a very complex system, obviously.
Yeah, it sounds like it, definitely. I've got a caller here, 780 area code. You're on the air with Daniel Joseph.
Hi, guys. It's Edo up in Canada.
Nice. Hey, Edo.
Hey, Edo. How are you doing?
Good show, guys. Great stuff, and I really appreciate it. Daniel, I'd just like to go back to the beginning of the program where you said it's all really about self-realization. I think there's another reinforcing point in this, in that in the 50 or so talks that I've recorded and transcribed, it's amazing the number of times that Daskalos has also said at the peak of one of his driving points, he would stop and say, this is about materialization. And that goes so well with this whole point about the crucifixion, etc. So I just wonder if you could expand on that if there's a moment.
On materialization?
Yes. And what,
okay.
In other words, materializing the body.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate.
Well, obviously the ultimate. You'll notice in the Christ story, and the Catholics are right about this, Mother Mary was born by Immaculate Conception.
Right.
Her son, Jesus, was born by Immaculate Conception. His two cousins were born by Immaculate Conception. Now, one of them was John the Baptist, who had done some bad things in a previous lifetime. So he gets his head cut off from because he's incarnated through the idea of man. So he has to obey the rules, and the rules are karma. You know, what you sow, so shall you reap. But Jesus, St. John, and Mother Mary all dematerialized their bodies.
Whoa.
They were complete masters of dematerialization and dematerialization. Now, in this system, it's something that certainly Daskalos could do and some of the advanced ones could do. But, you know, we're talking all the time about these qualities of the etheric double. And we always mention the four, the kinetic ether, the ascetic ether, the creative ether, and the imprintive ether. But there are another three, and two of them have to do with materialization and dematerialization. It's something Daskalos always said. He said, when you get these, matter will be a toy in your hands. You will be able to materialize what you want and dematerialize. He says, but in my system, it's only allowed for healing, not to show phenomena. And if someone tried and did some of that stuff for phenomena, they got sent out of the system because it's only for healing. So what Daskalos would do, he would dematerialize cancer tumors. There was this one lady who had damaged nerves. He had to dematerialize some of them and rematerialize them for her arm. And I watched him do it, and she was in such pain when she walked in. And when she was out, she was moving her arm freely, just stupefied by what had happened. He says, it's not just a matter of sending energy into the person and praying that they come out right. You have to visualize what that energy is to do in that person. So dematerialization and materialization are two skills that are available in this system if you proceed long enough and hard enough.
All right. Edo, do you have any...
Go ahead.
Is it cool if I call you Edo, too?
No, that's... Thanks very much. Yeah, I just... Oh, go right ahead. No problem. No, I just wanted to bring that up because Easter is coming, and it's such an important... It really sets the tone for this Christian celebration. I come from a Christian background, so I have to ditch a lot of, misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps to put things in perspective in a hurry. So thanks very much for covering that, Daniel. Thanks, Joseph. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Ed.
Bye now. That's cool. He knows. He seems to know a little bit. He's been studying this stuff a while, too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been, he's a real researcher. He's been, you know, like he said, transcribing some of the audio lessons, which is it's very difficult, but it's a great, great way to learn the material.
Right. Okay. So we're about an hour in. I've got just a few more questions here. Caroline is asking about, you know, she just wants to reaffirm that we don't have scripted lives like some of the New Agers are saying, right? Even though we do have karma. And with the soul groups, I guess I'll just let you answer that one. We don't have scripted lives, right?
Well, I don't know what exactly she means by scripted lives, but we all have a purpose why we're here. We have lessons to learn and things we are slated to learn. This is a schoolhouse, so we have certain lessons. But it's not like everything's worked out in advance and we're just following out a screenplay or something. You know, it changes a lot. And in matter of fact, you know, there's so many people in the higher dimensions where they thought, whoa, I want to come down. I want to be a light worker on Earth. Do you realize that only 1/3 of those people who said that can pull it off on Earth, because Earth is so hard and so distracting. You get caught up in so many things. A lot of people really want to help their fellow human beings, but their lives are so demanding. They don't have the ability to it. So, clearly it's not all scripted. It's sort of a trial and error thing in a way.
Right. And Craig is asking, and like I said, there's some new, he has been listening to the show, by the way, the previous shows, but he wants to know where he can find all of these teachings, maybe in audio. He's asking, where can we find these recorded teachings? I would say the researchersoftruth.org, as well as the Whale. Is it thewhale.us? Is that right? Where your book is?
That's right.
And
there's an audio.
Road.
There's an audio book if you like listening.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you go to Gumroad, just search for Daniel Joseph, I believe, and that's how I did it. And he has a big program that he did in when he went to Canada, and I believe you're still working on that one. But those are really awesome too.
No, they're all released now. And if you go to thewhale.us, if you go to thewhale.us, and you there's a link at the top called Online Lessons. You click that and you'll see all of them. You'll see a link to all of them.
All right. And so I threw those links down there in the chat room. David is asking, considering the tension in the U.S. government today and all this stuff going on, how are we to navigate in these times? Is it best to take on an active role on issues that are injurious to others, like immigration and EPA and stuff like that? Or should we just steer clear of it?
Well, it's good to do. I mean, to act quietly and locally, I think that's good. But to join groups that protest against other people and thoughts and ideologies, every time you protest against the thing, you feed the elementals of that thing. So protesters for peace are actually feeding war-loving elementals. And if you ever see some of those protests, they are extremely, you know, violent sometimes, or, you know, they're certainly aggressive. And they're sending out elementals that feed the other side. Now, on Cyprus, in 1974, the Turkish invaded it. It was an island that had Greeks in it, had Turkish people, and they were all considered themselves Cypriots. And then something went wrong with the political end of it, and Turkey invaded. And they drove the Greeks down to the southern half of the island. And after it was over, you know, the Greeks decided to start having something they called National Days, which is when they celebrate being Greek. You know, so they would, you know, there's a law with the UN force dividing these people, and the center of Nicosia is still there.
They're losing.
But these guys would walk around with drums, blow horns, and Gospel said, "You don't understand what you're doing. You're drumming up. You're feeding elementals from the other side." And then about 2 weeks later, after they did it, for the first time ever, the Turkeys started having their National Day. So we actually feed those things we protest against. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what happens, because every time we energize any kind of elemental, it strengthens. So that's what we're doing when we protest against ideologies. But, you know, to work locally and just work quietly for a better world, yeah, definitely do it.
Okay. So another real question, I've got this same question too about just, and I know I hate to keep asking the same stuff, Daniel, but the stuff about the groups, I know we don't pick our parents or whatever, but she's Caroline's asking about reincarnating with groups, because I've read this in books too, like there's a group of spirits or souls, or like this just the same souls or monads that kind of reincarnate together. And she's saying, if that were true for some of us with difficult people surrounding us on all sides, then the idea of reincarnating in the same soul groups is somewhat troubling. She says she was an orphan with a difficult adoptive parents and difficult circumstances, people scenarios, looks like really tough childhood. So she's happy to hear that she doesn't necessarily have to meet these folks again in the next lifetime. So that's just to hit that home.
Yeah,
that's not how. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I wonder about that too. I really do.
There, now, just think about this though. When there are people who, I mean, there certainly are groups who travel together. And just think about this: when the monad sends out these radiations that are destined to become human beings, to be incarnated and be humanized, you may meet one of those from the same monad, and usually you feel a tremendous affinity with them. But remember, some of those monads have already come through Earth incarnation and have returned back. Some of the radiations off those monads have
already been incarnated, completed the process, and returned back. Some of them are just coming out. Some of them have been out for a long time. So you can meet one from your same monad, but they would be on a totally different level of their evolution, if we can call it that. Deskos didn't like the word evolution, but certainly on their process of the journey of the prodigal son, there are different stages in that. So even though it's from the same monad or the same soul family, if you want to say it that way, it doesn't mean you're going to be absolutely in harmony with everybody, because we're all different stages of the ladder, the spiritual evolution.
All right. Okay. If you guys have any questions, again, we kind of want to wrap it up. I've got like one or two more questions here I've got to ask. I promised I would. But the number is 831-777-8643 if you want to talk to Daniel. Now this question, I've kind of understand it, but it's a little bit more advanced, but I think he really wants to know, and it has to do, I believe, with the 12 labors of Hercules. He said he's been working on the line of I think it's Nemea. Is that how you pronounce that? For a few years now. He said he's
Nemean lion. It's the lion of Nemea.
Okay.
They call it.
Said I've experienced visualizing meeting the lion and killing it. Although my visualization may not have been at fault, it felt real. I did it several times, and my friend who runs a group in Switzerland asked me how many dead lions I wanted and suggested just recalling the event when necessary. I did this for some time. I continue to work on the things that cause anger to arise in me in meditation and during introspection. Recently, I started to doubt that for me, the killing side of it is the right approach to take with anger. Is it necessary or appropriate to try to kill a natural response to certain situations in our lives? Recently, a few things have happened to me that have provoked anger in me, and I've found that it can bring great clarity and strength of purpose just to act positively and not in an aggressive way, but, for example, in a way to ensure steps are taken for the safety of others. By practicing loving observation, forgiveness, acceptance of ourselves and others. May this not lead to a softening and control of anger. Does it need to die? Is it helpful in this age to visualize a violent act and re-energize it? And he says, thank you as always, Steve. So that's one of the 12 labors of Hercules. I believe he's talking about one of the things we have to work on. I mean, I didn't understand it when I first read it.
What he's referring to is the practice associated with the symbol of life, where you go through the 12 labors of Hercules, visualizing them, because what these things are, they are simplistic visualizations that have been given to the Greek mystery school students. They weren't mistold to children at night when they went to sleep. These were teachings that were given in the Greek mystery schools. And so, remember, back in the old days, not everybody could read and write. So we had to have these visuals that told the whole story, so the teaching was in the story. Now, the lion, for those who don't know, represents anger, as he's saying. And you can't, Hercules in the myth, and we'll go through the myth, Hercules tries to kill the anger with a knife and shooting arrows, but the lion is so ferocious and so strong that the arrows and knives won't pierce its hide. So the only thing left he can do is to strangle it with his bare hand. Now, this isn't a violent, you know, chopping and hacking and whacking the lion. You're suffocating the lion. And this is a symbol for when we feel anger rise up, don't give expression to it. You know, you may feel like it, and it makes you feel stronger because this lion of anger is expressing itself through you, if we can call it like that. But the only way to really deal with it is to strangle it. The knives and the arrows represented other like elementals. You can't use an elemental to kill to bring anger down. You have to deprive it of its air. You have to deprive it of what gives it power. So Hercules strangles the lion. Then he's able to take his knife and cut the skin off the lion, and he skins the lion, and he puts the lion on his head. He empties out the lion's skull, and he puts it on his head. Now, why would he do that? This is a symbol that it's not wise just to be walk around like an innocent pigeon all the time. So sometimes we have to put the lion's head on and growl just so cunning people don't take advantage of us. And this is the same story in the Buddhist teachings where they got the snake that's always terrorizing the village, and they come to a monk and they say, oh, please, you know, you got to get rid of this snake for us. He's biting people. He's causing all this trouble. So the monk goes to the snake. He says, snake, what are you doing? This is mankind. Man is your brother. You gotta stop biting. Stop being so aggressive to them. And there's a smart snake, so he listened. And then a couple of weeks later, the monk walks by and he sees the snake on the side of the road, all beaten, bloody, just about dead. He runs over to the snake. What happened? He said, I listened to you. You told me I couldn't bite him. And so they beat me up. He said, I didn't tell you you couldn't hiss. And so sometimes we need to raise our tone of voice. We never release anger, but we frame anger to people who are trying to take advantage of us, maybe. So I say it like that. But anger is a very, very powerful thing. Now, as far as visualizing how many times, in the practice, we visualize, we go up this ladder. These 12 labors of Hercules are actually stages on a ladder between center number 10 and center number 8. And we go up and down. We visualize each of these 12 going up and down 7 times. So, you know, I don't know how many times he's done it, but we do it a lot of times, so it becomes a real imprinted elemental for our teaching, so that when we start to feel anger arise, immediately we know what to do. We need to suffocate it and hold it down. This is not the same as stuffing. This is not the psychological thing they talk about stuffing. This is just depowering it. Stuffing is, you're still feeling angry, you just don't let anybody know about it. This one is, we're strangling the energy that anger gets. Yeah. So it's a different kind of thing than stuffing. I don't know if I answered his question. Did I miss anything on his question?
He had a lot there in this question. Yeah, so I think you pretty much answered it. I think what he's talking about is the visualization of actually killing the lion. It might interfere with what the actual outcome of what he's trying to do, because he's asking, is it necessary to actually visualize killing or murdering something? Because it's not a real positive
act. If you think about it, what are we supposed to do? This is just anger is a face of our egoism, which should be completely killed in us.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what you say. Well, it doesn't bother me. I've killed my egotism, you know. So all the things we get upset about, all these reactions and everything, all these desires, all these things in the labors of Hercules are all about annihilating egoism in us. But the first two labors are they're killed. And the second labor is the hydra of desires, these endless desires we have. Those who appear as snake heads on, you know, snake with multi-heads. So these are chopped off and killed, but the rest of them aren't. The third one is the boar, and it represents the material body. You don't kill the material body, you tame it. So in the labor of Hercules, it's running wild, causing all kinds of trouble. So Hercules has to go and get it and bring it back, and he tames it, you know. And then the fourth labor is called the Syrian hind, which represents the personality. And our personality runs just like we said about the thoughts. It just hops around. And so this deer is given as an example because it just fleets through the forest very fast. Hercules has a very hard time catching it. And we as a seeker of truth, when we try to catch our personality and tame it and put it to the real task of, you know, soul self-realization, it takes a long time because we're used to running free like a wild deer in the woods.
Right.
But those are the first two are the only two that are killed. But all of it's about annihilating our egoism, and anger is just one of the worst faces of that.
Okay. I've got a caller in here. Let's take it. We'll take one, maybe two more. I don't want to keep you up, Daniel. Let's see here. 780 area code. I think you've called in before. I wish I could put names on these. You're on the air with Daniel Joseph.
It's Edo again.
I'm going to write that down.
Hello.
Yeah, gotcha.
Hello?
Go ahead, Edo. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I just wanted to come back for the
the listeners, maybe those who have are just starting into the system. Daniel's right. I do a lot of work with the transcripts, but I want to emphasize that I do more work on the exercises given by Daniel, by Daskalos, and by Paniota in the STOA website series. It's incredibly important and so helpful to be able to absorb the transcripts and the information if you're doing the exercises, particularly the series between 30 and 40 in the Paniota work. It's just incredible. There's nothing like it as far as I'm concerned. I don't have a hell of a lot of experience in it, but I just want to come back and emphasize the exercises are in this system are incredible. It makes, let me put it to you this way, it makes absorbing the intellectual aspects of this work so much easier.
Yeah, very important point. Very important.
Okay. All right. I'll go.
Okay. And then just to say a little bit more about it is, you know, the theory is the theory. The teachings are the theory, but it's the practices that really make you move along the spiritual path. And, you know, these things, it's just like it, whether it's this teaching or anything, just reading about it's not enough. You have to live it. And when you live it, then you get the real benefit. It's great knowing all this far-out information, and it's all true. But until we make it our own, it's not as important. I mean, what's important is to make it our own and to live by it.
All right.
I'll just add a Confucius. Can I just add a Confucius saying into that?
Absolutely.
Sure.
It works well. I hear, I forget. I see, I remember. I do, I understand. That nails this whole bit about what I'm saying about exercises way better than I could ever say it.
Yeah, very, 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 very good, very good.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Edo.
Okay, good night.
Someone chimed in the chat room and said that there is a young boy in Arizona who is, I don't know, he's leading quite a bit of people. I believe his name is Quetzalcoatl Martinez. I don't know if that's who he is. I don't know if that's the person you're talking
really?
About, but they wanted to bring him up. He's awful young. I've seen a picture of him.
Well, I'm really
glad. I'll have to email this info to you, but at 6 years old, he was speaking at the World Summit, so that's pretty impressive.
This might be our guy. Yeah, I'd love to see that information, please.
I have a final question, or maybe one of my questions towards, because I know we got to wrap this up, is when I do these shows, I talk to a lot of different people, and I talk to a lot of different people that believe a lot of different things and have had a lot of different experiences. But what bugs me the most about this whole thing, Daniel, what I run into more than anything, is the logistic scientific mind. This person that I run into, and I can't point fingers because it's like a battle that I'm up against, I feel like, with this in the media, that if you cannot scientifically prove it, then they just step all over it and there's nothing valid to it. And their arguments are real valid and they sound really good, and they have waves of people that will believe this too. And only thing I can say to them is these things that we do, these esoteric practices, I don't think will ever be able to be scientifically proven. Do you agree with that? I mean, this is like an individual thing. Until you try,
actually,
I don't know. I don't know, but I got to find a way to fight this.
Well, don't fight it, because you'll just strengthen it. But what you can do is try a new approach. But first of all, I will say, I find these things are following the scientific method, because you're given this practice of, say, this certain meditation. You do this in this way and this time. And a lot of people can do it, and they will have the same experience. So So that's a scientific method that other people can follow the same steps and come to the same experience. That's textbook scientific method.
Right.
Now, these same people who say, oh, you can't prove it, you know, we're in this multiverse. You know, this is just the third dimension. And unfortunately, until the quantum physicists came along, scientists only looked to this dimension for answers. So they couldn't possibly explain things. You know, it just they can't explain it all until they realize that there's more than one dimension. And now quantum scientists are really getting that, and they're theorizing about the parallel universes, and they think they're going to prove it this year with the cyclotron in Switzerland. They think they're going to be able to prove that there exists multi-dimensions woven in one with one another. So we'll see if they can prove it. But this, I would suggest this, Joseph. When you're talking to one of these guys, ask him if he's ever been in love.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely he'll say yes, and then say, prove it.
Right. All right.
He won't be able to. So there are many things that you can talk about that are absolutely true that we experience that you can't prove with, you know, mathematical formulas.
Yeah. I've heard one guy say all love is this chemical that's released in the brain, and I'm like, I don't think so. I'm sure that's a part of it, but I don't think that's all it is. You know, and I mean, if you've ever left your body.
Well, the chemical, but what's released in the chemical? Think about it. Okay, the endorphins and the dopamines and all that, but what's causing that to be released?
Right.
And what people don't realize is the elementals actually cause chemical secretions in the brain. They create depressions, and all those chemicals in the brain can be triggered by elementals.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
cause and effect.
Keep that in mind.
You're right. An effect there, there's definitely a cause. Where does it come from, right? And they'll never be able to prove consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to get scientists among scientists on this show because I'm trying to, like you say, Daskalos is saying this stuff is going to be taught in schools. And I think it will be, too, one day in the future. I really hope so. I hope it will.
Well, you can prove science. You can prove to scientists about consciousness. That should be the easy thing.
Right.
Because, you know, we talk about seven levels of consciousness. The first level is sensitivity. What has sensitivity? Well, every living thing has the sensitivity, but rocks have it. It's a rudimentary level of consciousness. Now, how can we prove that? They take those rocks, take a crystal, and you grow it on Earth. Mm-hmm. Then when they put it up in the space shuttle and they grew it in the space shuttle, it grew differently, clearer, bigger. So it sensed gravity. Crystals grow. So they grow and they sense gravity. So that means they're conscious of gravity. Some crystals are sensitive to electricity. If you put electricity, you put pressure on them, they'll create electricity. Or if you put electricity in them, they'll move. They'll create a expansion. They're conscious of these things. Plants are conscious of the sunlight. They follow the sunlight. That's consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not human consciousness, but it's a consciousness.
Yeah. And they've done studies where they've cussed out water and stuff and then told one cup, I love you, another cup that they didn't. And you could see what happens. I mean, I guess you cannot, like John Anthony West said, you know, you can't talk about moonbeams to the blind. They don't want to listen. Some people just don't want to hear it. But then, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe it doesn't have to be a fight, you know.
Yeah, just, you know, but it's true. I mean, sometimes it's better. I mean, Daskalos said, you know, why do you want to try to wake up everybody? You know, he used to say that to people and say, well, I tried to help this person. They wouldn't listen. So why do you want to wake up everybody? Just do your work and go forward. But I know what you mean. I am associated with a group of scientists, but most of them are starting, they're quantum scientists. So they start to listen because they're looking for answers because conventional science that only studies the three dimensions just can't answer everything. You have to bring in these other dimensions.
Well, I think I'm going to ask this one last question, and I think we need to kind of wrap it up. But I'm sure you're wanting to wrap it up too, right, Daniel? There's nobody in queue here.
Yeah, they kicked me out of Starbucks here. So
you got kicked out of Starbucks? That's terrible.
Well, I was they had to close.
All right, so I've had a listener that's been really supporting the show, and he asked, the first time I went on Spreaker, he came in and called and asked a question, and I haven't been able to get anybody to answer the question, but he practices esoteric practices and does meditations and stuff, and his name's Craig, and he's really worried about something. He does meditations, doesn't know much about your teachings, but he asked about the links and stuff, and I sent them to him. But he was meditating, and he would feel this, I believe he said it was like a blackness or an emptiness during his meditation that would close in on him, and he would kind of get these pins and needles feeling all over his body and stuff. Now, some have said that that might be a Kundalini thing, but I don't know. I'm not very advanced in meditation, but I want to try to ask you while I have you here, what could that be and what could he do about it? Do you have any idea?
Well, it's not likely it's Kundalini, and it's probably a good thing it's not Kundalini, because that's very dangerous to release until you're really have reached at least soul self-realization. People go crazy. They die from premature release of that. So what it is he's feeling the etheric double of his body. The pins and needles, the tingling, is just the quickening of the etheric in his etheric double, etheric energy. Now, what's causing that, I'm not sure. He said a blackness closing in on him. Does he not? Does that make him feel good or bad?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You know, there's the...
If you can tell us...
Because sometimes,
room,
you know... Because sometimes an elemental would approach you, and it makes your hairs on your back, your neck stand up. So it's not necessarily an enlightening thing. But if he's starting to become, but truly he is sensing his etheric double and the etheric energy in it. What's causing that to tingle? We need to talk about. I need to know more information.
Okay, he says it doesn't feel good. It feels bad, like something's closing in on him.
Then it's
bad.
Probably. Yeah, it's probably some dark elemental, because these elementals, they come to people and they suck their energy. They take their energy. Sometimes they don't, you know, it's just like any good parasite. It doesn't want to kill the host, so it draws it off.
Oh, my
sometimes
gosh.
Excessively, but most of the time in a slow way.
That's what I saw when
so
I was sleeping.
He could feel,
that's scary.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I've asked that question too.
No, the same
thing happened to me when I was trying to kind of going in and out of my body, and I was trying to. I got real angry, and I tried to get out of my body, and I saw this black thing just come at me and pretty much sit on top of me, and then I woke up and I was like, "What was that?" You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what that was, but it was right in front of me. It was so black I couldn't see in front of my face. You know.
Yeah, that's it. It didn't sound good the way you described it. And, you know, the key there is you got angry. See, these things can't touch a pure person. So if we have anger in us, that's like a door open for these kind of things. You know, or just not putting a guard around you. You know, Daskalos, he said when you go out of your body, you really should put a guard to watch over your body. One time he was out of his body and a black magician came in and stabbed him. So, you know, that's a physical thing. The guy was there, but you can have these etheric attacks as well.
Yeah, James was telling me about a guy that was doing astral travel, and he got really far out there, and I don't know if it was an elemental or whatever, gut punched him, and he felt it. Like, it really just gut punched him. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess Craig was asking is what does he need
to
do?
It really does happen.
I interrupted that whole thing. I'm sorry, Craig.
What's he need to do?
Yeah,
the question?
What can he do about it? Yeah.
Well, first of all, when you do a meditation or try to get out of your body, you should purify the atmosphere by prayer. Don't just start it up, you know. Pray. And your intention is to be protected. So you pray for protection. And the other thing is once you start to come in contact with your etheric double, you can draw the energy from the surrounding environment and make it extremely bright and intense and strong and clear. And it's just like cockroaches. You turn a light on, they run away. So these things don't like the light.
Yep,
so I would suggest just practice visualizing his body surrounded by white light and say a prayer for protection.
I'm telling
before
you guys,
he starts any work like that, any meditation.
This stuff is real, because what you just said, man, validate. That's what I'm talking about. I can't scientifically prove it. But that black thing that was on me, I'm telling you, my face was in the couch, and I was reaching for the light, if you can imagine that, right? So I'm reaching for the lamp, trying to turn it on, because I'm just kind of freaked out. And when I turned the lamp on, it was gone, you know? So you're right.
See, well, when you have your own direct experience, you know, you don't need anybody to prove it to you because you had a direct experience of it. You may not understand it, but you know you had the experience.
Well, this has been a great show, Daniel, and thanks for all the callers, and thanks for coming on and spending time with us again. I hope we can do it again next month if you got time, you know. I put all the links in the chat room for you guys, and I will put some more on the website. And do you have any final thoughts for tonight, Daniel? Any final things you want to say?
I encourage everybody to, you know, make their own approach to this, their inward approach to themselves and God, you know, just do it. I mean, time is coming. A day comes, it goes. Next day comes and it goes. Years go by. And what are we doing? At the end of our life, not one of us is going to look around and say, gee, I should have worked more. You know, at the office, I should have. You know, we're going to think about the things we really value, and we should think about those things now, and make sure we don't neglect them for things that aren't so valuable, like all the time we waste on silly things. You know, make it count. This is your life. Make it count.
Right on. Very well said. And I want to thank you guys again. Thanks for coming out. If you didn't catch this, or if you want to tell anybody about this show. It's on Spreaker, iTunes, Google Play. It will be up in the stream as well for replay. And tomorrow night, we're going to have Preston Dennett on. That's going to be a great show. And again, Daniel, thank you so much for coming out and speaking with us.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
All right, good night, guys. See you tomorrow night.